From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 29th day of September 2017. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the grain stocks numbers as released by the United States Department of Agriculture and the impact of the commodity markets with Mike Zuzalo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. A bit later in the program, we'll check the weather forecast, not only with Eric Snodgrass from Agro. He'll have a complete look at the Corn Belt weather, but also with Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey, Prairie Research Institute. Along the way today, we'll discuss a little bit about the ire of Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa as it relates to the RFS and some proposals by the EPA this week. And we'll do all of that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Mike Zuzalo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us today. What a beautiful Friday it is.
It is indeed. Good to be with you too, Todd.
Well, let's start in on the USDA numbers from this morning with the grain stocks report. It changed a few things, but I don't know how much it really changed the marketplace. What's your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the context of the grain market expectations, I think we saw a bullish report. I think that the market was a price, was surprised, and it's a surprising price supportive report for corn and beans, especially because they took the supply side down. And, you know, keep in mind with these September 1 grain stocks, we'll have new ending stocks figures for 2016-2017. And in that kind of a context, you lost 56 million bushels of corn. You're keeping us closer to 2 billion bushels by doing that instead of moving us farther away from 2 billion bushels and building supply, which I think the market was expecting, Todd. Quite frankly, I think the corn was probably set up for the most negative reaction because of the fear of what we've seen in USDA reports as of late. Now, beans, it was even more important from a standpoint of the early yields coming in strong across the bean belt, and also the expectations for improved rainfall for dry areas of Brazil that want to get planted right now. We actually shaved 44 million bushels off the ending stocks for last year. So now we're dealing with a 300 million bushel old crop carryover instead of a 345. That translates into a sub 450 carryover coming into this harvest until we see the October report. So I think in that context, the grain market expectations were not met at all because they were really set up for a negative report.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, and I have these figured in a spreadsheet that I keep track of, a 56 million bushel change for ending stocks for corn, down that is, 44 million for soybeans. That would put it at 301. Did you see the executive sheet that came out from the USDA, the summary? And they have the 44 there. They don't do this for corn because I don't think they have quite enough numbers to actually put a balance sheet together, but they do it for soybeans. So they put the 44 in for corn, but followed that up with 34 an additional for residual. And I don't know whether that means just a 10 bushel drop once we get to the projected WASDE number for October, or whether that number goes somewhere else, and maybe you can help explain it if you've thought about that.
No, I think it's very confusing. I think that it should be the full 44 million bushels because the residual you would think would be a crush or something related to not figuring in crush. And I think that given the...
It's the way they put it, because they put the 44 first and then the 34 after it. And it just looks like in the spreadsheet, it should go the other way around. So,
well, yeah, no, I feel the same
yeah,
way.
So 301 is the number we think we're dealing with. And we'll know more by the time we get to the October World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates and what they do with crop production. So we've got this one in the bed at the point. And it looks like it was pretty decent or bullish for corn and soybeans. The numbers reacted pretty nicely today, too.
Yeah, they did. And notice where the December corn closed at, 356 and a quarter. That was last week's highs. We ended up settling about a penny below that. But, you know, for both the corn and the beans to have this kind of a reaction was very good. I think the one thing that you can say is the wheat market did not provide the needed support. I don't think the wheat market, because it's my leader right now, wanted to go higher today. And I say that because the inflationary data The fact that the S&P 500 was making new highs, the dollar was having its best week. It's probably going to finish its best week now of all of 2017. Your inflationary data was just starting to go against you in the commodity sector, and the gold pointed that out earlier in the week, and it looked like the wheat wanted to roll over anyway, technically, and because of the inflation data. Well, the spring wheat numbers USDA put out today were bigger than the trade was expecting. So in the short term, it was a negative feature to the market. I think corn and beans could have done a lot better technically, and where we closed for the week, the month, and the quarter, had it not been for that. So that's probably point number one, or the highest priority going into next week. Fastest thing that could turn us around in the wheat market is obviously missed rains in the hard red belt and the soft red belt, which I think now the market is counting on after today's close.
On that note, harvest pressure expected next week across both the eastern and the western corn belt for corn and soybeans?
To a degree, the models are not really coming together super well until they weren't until about today, and it looks like the upper Midwest and the western corn belt is going to get a big drink of water, and it's going to be split up in a couple different systems. It does look like it gets into Illinois and parts of Indiana, but it doesn't look like it gets too far south into those states. So I think it won't be as smooth going, and I think, quite frankly, producers would be very happy with a slower pace right now unless they had corn they were worried about the lodging and the standability on, because there's a lot of tired producers out there, a lot of producers out there trying to make room for corn and beans that they didn't think they'd be harvesting this quickly.
And the crops remain better than they expected?
To a degree. You know, I talked to Chicago about this yesterday to several different colleagues, and they're not hearing as much as me yet. But I am starting to hear bean yields tapering off, and I'm starting to hear more producers say, I'm wondering whether my later corn is not going to be as good as my earlier corn. And this is pretty much the southern half of Illinois, the southern half of Indiana, and what has gotten done in central and eastern Ohio. Out here in this area, it's pretty open from a standpoint that wherever it was dry, it's poor yields. Wherever we got the June rain that saved the corn crop, the yields are doing better than the producers had expected.
I will talk with you again in just about 15 minutes. You'll join us for Commodity Week. And for those who are listening to the home station, you and Dale Durkles will be there for half an hour. The rest of them can hear it online at willag.org as soon as I get it up this afternoon, on the website, that is, and over the weekend on many of these radio stations. Hey, thanks for being with us, and I'll chat with you shortly.
All right, Todd. Thank you.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, negotiators in the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA talks, say they're making progress after the third round ended this week. A Bloomberg report says that the talk of progress comes as tensions grow between the U.S. and Canada over aircraft. The U.S. imposed trade duties on Canadian-made aircraft, inflaming tensions within Canada. The nations did make some progress in the talks, including closing out a chapter on small and medium-sized businesses. The U.S. Commerce Department made the decision to impose duties on Bombardier's Marquis jetliner. On the final day of negotiations, Canada's foreign minister calls the Trump administration protectionistic. At the same time, she says the plane issue is separate from the NAFTA negotiations. Negotiators did say they made progress in several different areas, including telecommunications, digital trade, and state-owned enterprises. The chapter on competition will probably be agreed on before the next round of talks begin. Well, let's stay with NAFTA, but we'll turn to Mexico, where PanAmPost.com says the U.S. will be putting forth controversial proposals during the next round. The U.S. will allegedly be putting forth proposals for what it calls seasonal windows when it comes to agricultural trading with Mexico and Canada. The article says this type of proposal would be a form of managed trade by establishing seasonal ag trade restrictions in North America. The president of the Mexican National Agriculture and Livestock Council offered an example of what that means. He says America wants to establish conditions saying that when Georgia produces strawberries, Mexico either won't be able to export strawberries to the U.S. or would only be allowed to put the same amount of strawberries into the marketplace that Georgia has. Ag trade has not been limited by seasonal windows since 2008, when a period of 15 years of gradual reduction was established. And finally today, we'll turn our attention to livestock. A new report says the U.S. beef herd will keep expanding through the end of this decade, but that there should not be any need for increased beef packer capacity. The report from CoBank says the herd will increase 3 to 5% from 2018-19, improving pasture conditions, continued profitability in beef sectors, and expansion in recent years will lead it along. Trevor Amon, animal protein economist at CoBank, said over the last 3 years the expansion has been the most aggressive on record. And that's a quick look at today's agricultural news. Well, earlier this week, the Environmental Protection Agency announced it's considering a new proposal to reduce 2018 biodiesel, advanced biofuel, and total renewable fuel standard volumes, in addition to a prior proposal to cut 2019 volumes that has ethanol supporters pretty hopping mad. Ethanol industry groups swiftly responded with press releases that the EPA proposal was unjustified, unneeded, contrary to the RFS's intent, and would harm the industry, jobs, and energy independence. An angry longtime ethanol backer and supporter of President Trump took to the Senate floor. Here's what Chuck Grassley of Iowa had to say.
I come to the floor because I'm very disturbed about some actions coming up out of EPA affecting biofuels and contrary to what the president promised. In other words, I think people working for the president aren't following the president's direction.
Grassley says he became pretty suspicious that the president would be unable to keep his RFS promises after he nominated Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt to head the EPA and former Texas Governor Rick Perry to be energy secretary. Both are from oil-producing states.
We expressed to those candidates, those nominees, our support for biofuels and renewable energy and the benefits of a strong biofuels policies. One by one, these nominees assured us of their support because they were made well aware of President Trump's support by the president himself. They told us they knew who was boss.
And a couple of months ago, Grassley says the president called the senator personally and asked Grassley to tell his Iowa constituents Trump would keep his word on ethanol.
You can imagine my surprise this very day when I see that President Trump's EPA has released a proposal out of the blue to reduce the volume requirements for biodiesel for 2018 and 2019 under the renewable fuel standard.
Grassley calls it a bait and switch, and it's led him to suspect that big oil is again prevailing in the Trump EPA, as he claims it did in the Obama EPA. That's not a way, he says, to make America strong once again. This is the Closing Market Report for Friday afternoon, and we're now joined by Eric Snodgrass. He's from Agrible. Hey, Eric, thanks for being here. What a beautiful day it is in our part of the world.
Yeah, no kidding. I've been desperately waiting for these cold fronts that have come through the east central part of the Corn Belt here, because we had such a scorcher over the last 10 to 15 days. But I kind of have some bad news with that, and that is, you know, that this cooler weather that we've got now isn't going to really hang on for too long. So let's dig in and kind of figure out what's going on. So these cold fronts that came through, they brought quite a bit of precipitation to the western Corn Belt. So we've seen a delay in harvesting across the midsection of the country with all of the rain that they've received over the last week or so, whereas the eastern Corn Belt's been really dry. And even as that cold front came through to cool us down, it was so dry it couldn't kick off any precipitation. Now, but the only thing that's going to be a lingering effect of that cold front is we do have a frost threat in far northern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin, and Michigan. But this is the time of year for that. A bigger concern for us here in the eastern Corn Belt is with all of the dryness and with all of the heat, you know, we've actually only seen in the state of Illinois over the last month anywhere between 10 and 60% of our normal rainfall. And what that tells me is the risk there for these field fires is very high, especially if you get a good windy day in there. So if we look over the weekend, the eastern Corn Belt stays dry. And what's kind of scary is we're kind of seeing the pattern that got us into that heat from a week ago with all the rain to our west looks to be reestablishing. So here for us in central Illinois, we may not see a decent rainfall event until maybe next Thursday. that might be what the impact of the big ridge will have on the eastern Corn Belt. So heat's going to build again in the eastern part of the Corn Belt. We're going to have a deep trough out west, and that's going to keep the center part of the country, you know, just think Texas, north through parts of, you know, the center plains, but getting toward Iowa, Minnesota, it's going to keep them wet. So that's kind of our short-term outlook.
So that'll hamper them, I suppose, a bit as they try to get through the fields there, but not too much, I take it.
Yeah, I hope not. And if I look a little bit longer range, you know, October is normally a dry month. And you know, for us here in central Illinois, we typically have a mid-month frost threat. We are seeing the pattern, you know, basically the jet stream pattern getting active. And when I say that, I mean more troughs coming through the flow after we get through the first week of October, which will be a very warm week. But it looks like beyond that, the pattern may attempt to reestablish itself where we have a ridge over the eastern half of the continent, and it's going to be cool over the western part. So that's an interesting thing to see. And where that really gets important is in the tropics. You see, during the month of October, we have to pay close attention to the Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico. We don't tend to have systems that come out of the middle of Atlantic anymore. They come out of the Gulf and out of the Caribbean. If there's a big ridge, these things can kind of sneak up under that ridge and get pretty far into the, you know, into the Corn Belt sometimes. I mean, remember, Hurricane Sandy was a late October event, so that's something to keep an eye on there.
As you have turned your attention already a little further southward, why don't you talk a little bit about South America? We keep hearing the word La Nina come up.
Yeah. So, you know, we've been projecting for a while now that the Central Pacific was going to be stuck somewhere in between El Nino and La Nina. And we call that in the field ENSO neutral. ENSO stands for El Nino and the Southern Oscillation. Now, all that means is we're right now seeing sea surface temperatures a little bit cooler than average. And when that sets up, we have to look for the atmosphere to respond. And we're actually getting a kind of an atmospheric response out of this in the fact that the start of the Brazilian growing season, where they're trying to get in fields and plant, has been dry in the north and wet in the south. And that's very typical of La Nina. But this La Nina is pretty weak. The last 7 days, they've had some precipitation, just a lot of hit or miss showers. I've been looking at some satellite animations of it, and it's not been widespread. But, you know, they need a few inches of rain to get the season going so that the soybean crop will germinate. So the big consequences here is if we have any delays in planting in Brazil, that basically pushes the safrinha crop back, which lowers its yield potential. And safrinha just means that second crop. So while it's not a major disaster, I'm watching for the threat of some drier conditions in the northern growing regions as we move throughout this whole season. That's typical of a weak La Nina.
Hey, thanks for taking the time with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, that's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agrible. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.